He talks, I think, of Mark Twain.
Oh, really?
Or Mark Twain, Hal Holbrook, of course.
Hey, see, that's the reason I thought of that is that's a whole lot more than I knew. I didn't know that Hollywood would have what those things that you say. They have the, what do you, how do you say it?
Well, it's the open classroom. What that is, it's one big building.
One big building.
One big room.
Yes, with little.
Yeah, it's the old one-room schoolhouse. The only trouble is you've got a lot more children in it.
Yeah.
And some architects figured out that if you put acoustical carpeting and acoustical ceiling, it would keep the noise down. Well, it doesn't. And children need to concentrate. And if you have a class here, and a class here, and this class can see what's going on here.
Yeah. At least they see whether they're here or not, don't they?
Yeah. And they hear, too. And they allow the children to do their homework lying on their stomach on the floor, if that's the way they want to do it. But that's not the real problem. The real problem is that everything is computerized and audiovisual equipment. There's no such thing as reading a story. If a child is to have a story read, they go to a machine and they put a pair of... See, I know because I write this stuff. That's how I've been making it. So they put a pair of earphones on and they feed cards. They don't work with a teacher. They feed cards into a machine. There's one machine that I've done material for is called an audio card reader. And the child goes in this little cubicle and they take the card and they put it in, they push a button, and some voice comes out of the machine and says, John walks down the street. And then they look at a picture that this is a street. And then the child has to repeat it, so he pushes a button and he records. And they're people relating to machines, not people relating to people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm very old-fashioned. I think people need to relate to people.
And I see that's way beyond me. But in Winter Garden, they don't do that.
No, in Winter Haven, they have teachers.
I insist on getting that wrong.
I know. I'll catch you. They're pretty much all the same anyway. Winter Haven, Winter Garden,
yeah.
Winter Park.
So she just took to it there, just...
She loved it.
Well, she got along all right at Hollywood.
Yeah.
She didn't care.
No, she didn't know the difference.
Yeah.
But she knows the difference now. And we've had long talks about it. She likes a teacher that tells her what's wrong with something instead of a IBM printout.
An old-fashioned kid, huh?
And also, she's having her roots changed very soon after she barely put them back in again. You know, when you transplant a plant, you got to be careful.
Mm-hmm.
Too many transplantings and
you
do damage. But I think this is a good move. And I think she'll like it.
It did her good, you think, down here?
The first move? The first move was a necessity.
Mm-hmm.
I really would prefer not to make a second move this soon, but I think it's also a necessity, and I think the move in the long run will be good for her, because I think it's a better area for her.
Yeah.
And besides, I can make a living up here. I can't there. And sooner or later, that would tell.
I use an old GMC philosophy on that. What's good for the parents has got to be good for the kids.
The parents have got to survive, too.
Parent-oriented child philosophy.
I used to joke about that. I used to say I was here first.
Yeah.
My child's going to live with me. He's got to live by my rules because I was here first. When he has his home, then he can make his kids live by their rules. But I don't really feel it in here.
But there was the 18-year-old that was going to England. I get
Denmark.
Them backwards. Well, one of
them
going to England.
Oh, no. He was, but he's not now. He's going to come here instead.
Yeah.
He's going to go to Gainesville.
And then he decided to do that, and then you told him...
Well, it's all right, because I couldn't afford to send him to England anyway. I'm glad he made the decision. It was really made for him before he made it, but I'm glad he decided that's what he's going to do.
And he made this decision before you were coming to Gainesville.
Yeah. Well, I had talked to him about not being able to afford to send him to England. And he got to thinking about it, and he thought maybe it'd be a good idea to get a year of college under his belt first.
Mm-hmm. What are you saying about it?
But it's another thing where a lot of his friends were going on this program, and he wanted to go too. And he was willing to work, but...
That's, yes, I've noticed that. If someone brings up in school that they ought to take a trip to Spain, the word gets around so fast. And pretty soon, you see, they got the mamas and papas thinking that it's inevitable that they go to Spain.
Well, you know what my grandma used to say about that? There's nothing so great in Europe. I came from there.
Yeah.
My daughter got hooked up into that nonsense, that travel business, and started out with school, and it got addicted. She went over to go on one of these learning trips, exchange or something.
I don't think it's a bad thing, Wade.
Certainly is expensive.
Well, I was just about to say, I couldn't afford it. If I could afford it, or if he could afford it, that'd be fine. But neither of us can afford it right now.
I see. They get a funny attitude about Europe, it seems to me. They get sort of really romantic about it. And it seems to
Any
me they go over there and live a fiction. That's my major objection, is that they continue to live a fiction, and it's difficult for them to get into a realistic situation as long as they live.
You don't live realistically.
I don't know. Realism sort of starts at the town council meeting, I think.
How about that?
And I don't feel that these student people, they enjoy the life, but I'm not too sure that they get integrated into a town council situation.
Well, some of them may
in the future, after several years.
I may not be right, but sooner or later, a human being has to assume responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when a boy becomes a man, when he assumes responsibility. I don't care what it's responsibility for, but assuming responsibility. And I think it's great for these kids to go around Europe, and I think the more people you meet from the more varied backgrounds, the better things are. But sooner or later, you have to take what you've learned and apply it somewhere. And that's what too many people don't do. They keep playing the game and not getting in to be constructive or not to be a builder anymore. They remain an audience rather than a performer. Net
responsibility. This might be off the subject matter, but I ran into an old developer friend that I'd met in the Crystal River days at a sandwich shop downtown. And he had sort of a pallid look on his face and a Bible in his hand. And I asked him what he was doing. He says, "Well, I should say that I'm working full time for the Lord now." Now, this fellow was a hellraiser. I mean, he got divorced and remarried and divorced again, and he went on his search for everything through drugs and alcohol and the whole. I mean, he can give a fine story now.
Oh, really?
And he gave it to me about everything he'd done, which I already knew. He didn't even tell me about it.
Yeah.
But what brought it to mind is that he said, "It's just marvelous now. I can get up in the morning and I don't have to worry about what I do. I just give it to the Lord. He has no more responsibility." He's done. He's free. He's home free. He doesn't have to worry about anything else.
Don't really think that's what was intended when they were trying to tell him
that. Well, that's certainly the way he took it. He was a fine Eric Hoffer student. I'll tell you. I mean, you could plug him into that book. Just
is that right? Yeah. He gives up his liberty for equality. That's very tough.
No more freedom for him.
Oh, yeah. He's had enough freedom.
Mm-hmm. I think the most detracting thing there is that he also refuses to take any responsibility for his actions now.
Yeah.
See, it's all the man upstairs that's working.
I had a young Catholic friend when I was in college who was trying to lead me astray, or at least to break down my inhibitions.
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't work, so she decided she'd like me anyway. And to show how much she liked me, she said to me that it was all right, whatever I did in life was okay as long as I became a Catholic before I died. Because that would absolve me from everything I'd done wrong. Otherwise, I'd end up in hell. Even if I hadn't done anything wrong, just by being here, I might end up in hell. Never been able to quite figure that logic, but she sure was happy.
Yeah. Oh.
She would raise hell on Saturday night and go to church on Sunday.
Yeah, that's a fine institution. Oh, Harry Merritt, you don't know him, the architect in town? Well, he's about the only spark plug over there in the school.
Yeah.
Good or bad, he's at least got some vibrancy to him.
You didn't show Guy the picture of the school board candidate.
Oh, no. They probably have it in the paper. I'll show you that in a minute.
If I...
School board candidates. It's marvelous. It's in this morning's paper. But old Harry, he's a staunch Catholic. He's got five kids, and he does the whole rigmarole. And he had four or five students around with him one day, and I think Norman Jensen was in on it. That's where I got it from. And Harry was talking away about, well, I'll go to Mass, and I'll raise my children as good Catholics, and I'll do, he's got this rhetoric he goes into.
Yeah.
He says, but I'll tell you, if I die and find out that this ain't right, I'm going to be pissed off. But he's not going to give it up. he's working at it on a bet basis.
Yeah.
And he doesn't see a better bet yet.
Yeah.
And nobody knows. And this is the best deal he's got offered to him.
Yeah.
So he's going to follow the rules just in case. But it's not going to stop him being mad.
Yeah.
It's all right. That's one of the funniest things I've heard to come out of the mouth of a true believer.
Yeah.
But you know, there are probably a lot who think it and don't say it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Well, somewhere along the line, I don't know, this is out of my... His interests are pretty much outside of my...
That's what makes him interesting,
field.
Though.
I can't follow him. I mean, I just have to take his word for it. But what I find in the countryside is, up to a point, you see, what they do is valid. It's their experience. Once they leave their experience and start having ideas, in any kind of idea, politics, how to vote, or in how to go to church, or all those things, they pretty extreme.
Mm.
Your Sunday school teacher, Guy. Your Sunday school teacher, the man with the Reader's Digest. Tell her about that one.
Yeah. That's right. Now that's true.
That's an example of that.
He's a well man, pump man, and I ran around with him right smart for a while. The last time I got in with him, he was kind of the overseer for a great big section of land out there that's. People bought. I guess there from Miami, you see a lot of foreign money owns all the country. You know how it is, Miami or anywhere, Tampa.
Arabia.
And
he
had bought up all those cattle. He had 500 or 600 steers out there that he had bought up for the fellow. And he was out there calling them in and counting them and handing them out some pellets. And and then in vegetables, he knew how to handle them, how to do them, and he could put in the wells, you see, dig a well and put the pump in, all those things he could do. He was mechanical, he could fix his tractor. And at that time I was on this little circuit going to Sunday school and church. I got burnt out. I'm sorry I went so much. Once a month I went out there, and it was in the summer, and the teacher was away, and he was substitute teacher for a time or two. And this time he was hearing the lesson. And he brought the Reader's Digest with him. And he's going to tell us about a little article there. And I wish I could give you the article, but I never thought of it until a lot later. I could ask him, Cecil Pardee, and his sister worked down at John Palmer's store for years. She just quit. She was up between 65. She was on 65, and she just, feet got hurt, and she quit. And he would remember. I mean, he could tell me what it was. That's been several years. And you see, he could tell his own experience, but he couldn't give this stuff out of the book. And he started to tell what that little Reader's Digest article said, and he couldn't tell. And he got to sweating. And he thought, well, I'd read a little of it. Well, a little of it wouldn't do it. And so he just got tied up in that thing and read the whole damn article. Two or three pages. Just sitting there with it. Frustration. He didn't have the skills. If he's something like that, I could have helped him. I could have said, Cecil, what the hell are you sweating over that thing for? Let me have it. And that wouldn't have been trouble to me. But most of the things he did, I couldn't do.
That's why I'm so envious of people who do things with their hands.
Yeah. Well, he could. He sure could. And then he could tell about them, too, his experiences. Well, now, I don't know what you mean by doing things with the hands. He
make things, do things, mechanically figure out things. Actually, I can't milk a cow either, and that's another thing I probably could learn that I admire. I was just thinking, when you were talking about how to work the stove, if I had lived back at the time, say, this house was built, and had to operate a kitchen in those days, an awful lot of skill was involved that,
yes, it was.
You know, people forget how difficult it was.
Well, I get that direct from running to these kids that come down, and you almost wind up giving them instructions on how to live, because
mm-hmm.
these are older type houses.
That's right.
And they have to wind up doing a lot of things themselves, which is good for them, and they enjoy it. But my word, they
don't
know.
You know, it's frightening if you don't have someone to guide you. Now, my grandmother knew from her mother, but if I would come in cold to a situation like this, I'd have a very hard time. My grandmother used to bake bread, and she was in that kitchen all day long cooking.
Yes.
When I make fresh vegetables, even that's easy, but usually I just take a plastic pouch and drop it in a bag and put some boiling water, you know. And it would be very difficult. I think I would enjoy it, but it would be very difficult for me to try and go back into an older house or an older situation and learn to use these things, because it's out of my realm of experience.
How old were you when you saw her do that?
I never saw her do it. I know she did it because I've heard stories. My mother would tell me about things her mother did, but I didn't know my grandmother.
How old were you when your mother told you?
Oh, I must have been in my teens.
Well, let me tell you. What I've found is that children don't ever really learn about the way the world operates when they're young, when they're growing up. The saying is, you know, that they were young and impressionable and they understood all that, but they don't
understand. Oh, no. No. You're right. Until you do something, you don't understand it.
As an adult. Well, now Mr. Nealon was pushed out of the nest when he was around 18 in California, and he can report on that.
I can tell you about my first five or six disastrous meals, because I didn't know how to cook till after I got married and was in a kitchen.
Sure.
And had people waiting to eat.
Sure.
And I remember what a disaster my first meal was, and my mother-in-law said to me, don't feel badly, because her first meal was worse. She had watched her mother cook for years, and the first chicken she made had all its insides in it. She just took the chicken and stuck it in the... They didn't clean them out like they do now. She says the house just had this horrendous odor, and all her guests sat there, and nobody said a word, and she had all the guts inside the chicken. So she made me feel better, because her first experience was worse than mine. And I remind myself, although I still have a tendency to overprotect with my daughter, that she's got to make her own mistakes. I can't make them for her. I just try and make it a little easier as we go along, that's all.
You know, I was out of the nest, I sort of kicked myself out pretty young. I was no more responsibility than my parents after I was about 18 at all. Very little worried before then, a couple of years. But...
Well,
I had that Christianity business in my head.
Yeah.
And my life, it was vacant until I was about 22, 23 years old.
I was 35.
Really?
I was over sheltered. My father wouldn't even let me get a job because he felt it was a smack at his ability to take care of me if I would earn money.
Right.
I could help people, but I couldn't earn money.
Yeah.
But then I lost both my parents before I was 21. I was 20. And I learned awful fast, because I ended up with an 11-year-old boy to raise. And I'd worked my way through college, but you can't count that. You know, I worked as a waitress, and I babysat, and I did little jobs around the university, because I paid for 3/4 of my own college education. But I came home, and there I was with an 11-year-old boy, no money, because both of my parents had died after long illnesses, and no experience with dealing with people. And I got taken time and again. People would take advantage of me, and, you know, I was out eager to do anything. I thought you could live on $40 a week. Well, you probably could, but not if you were raised the way I was raised. And even after that, I really don't think my life started to get full, and I began to know what I was doing when I was about 35.
Mm-hmm.
I just kind of went around fumbling and trying this and trying that. And I think I jumped into marriage for possibly the same reason. I was lost.
Yes, a lot of fumbling, isn't it?
It takes a while to grow up, but boy, the years are good now.
I think of all the things I did, I thought I was doing and trying to do, and just how far off I was from being able to really make it.
Yeah, but the beauty is that you can keep trying.
Well?
It's not my expression, somebody else said it, but there's nothing wrong with being a self-made man as long as you don't consider the job done too soon. That's what's wrong with most people, you know. It's good to try and make your own way, but you just got to keep, at least I feel, you just got to keep trying. And keep expanding and keep developing.
Yeah, doesn't seem to be much of a problem there.
Not too many people doing it. I can show you a whole town in Central Florida called Center Haven where nobody's developed in years.
They've shut down shop, huh?
They're not bad people. It's just, I don't know, they are so totally content with their lot that they make no effort to grow anymore, or reach out, or do anything else. It's like a little formal garden. It's all there, and I can't even compare it to that. You have to prune a garden. You're not even doing any pruning.
You've not been there very long.
No, since June. It's a beautiful area.
Yeah.
Absolutely beautiful.
Yeah.
That's why you picked it out?
No, I picked it out because I was hired by 2 producers to come out and work with me.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, the TV series that I was supposed to work on lost its funding. Or let me put it this way, it's in New York, and they still say they're going to do it, but since June, no money is coming from it. And I've really lost interest in it by now. It wasn't really what I wanted to do in the first place. But it was a chance for me to make the money, I thought, to do the things I wanted to do. And the other producer's still pushing his projects through, and his money hasn't come through, because money's very tight right now. And the film business is a luxury.
That makes it a hardship on a lot of people, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sure does. In the state of Florida, there are only two producers now who are safe with enough work to keep those doors open.
Oh, really?
And we have something like 52, 60 producers. And I mean full-time producers. We have a lot of people who produce but do other things too. We have 50, 60 companies. And I only know two of them. One of them is managing to survive on commercials and the other on law enforcement films. Motorola has been using government grants to train policemen, and I've done a couple of those films for this man in Miami. He's got some good grant money, and he's in pretty good shape. But my old boss, man I worked for 4 years, who was one of the leading educational documentary producers in the state, I do not know from him, but I've heard from some other people. He did a lot of work for Sears Roebuck and Company, and Sears has cut back all their film work. So he doesn't have anything coming from there anymore. And he lost another series that was for television, so he doesn't have that, and he's in kind of bad shape right now.
And all the people that work for him.
Yeah. There's supposed to be a TV series coming in, a Quinn Martin series coming into Miami, and I sure hope nothing goes wrong, because they have a whole industry down there. It's just sitting on pins and needles because nobody has any work. They're out doing all kinds of other things.
It's a lot of people, huh?
Mm. Plus two laboratories. Mm. Each laboratory has people in there. There's no film going through the laboratory. They're not making any money. Equipment houses. So it's the industry is really depressed right now.
And it's not a temporary thing. We've just been working up to this.
I don't think it's temporary. I think it's going to get worse before it gets better.
I hate to think of it.
And, of course, that's just one industry. There are a lot of other people in other industries, too. Man was telling me, I have a friend who's a newspaper reporter. He was telling me there's a man in an electronics company. He's been in business for 17 years.
Mm-hmm.
Top credit rating. He hasn't been able to meet payrolls for 2 months now. And he's got plenty of business on the books, but nobody's paying the bills. So now he had to put all of his customers on COD. But he does a lot of work in the construction business, and that's mostly he's not paying the bills. So it just, you know, makes waves all around, reaching out into all areas.
Well, let me tell you, there's your big book that I have show the sort of thing you've been doing?
Mm-hmm. I also brought you, which I didn't have with me last time, a resume on me.
Well, it's an example.
Yeah, I've got some examples.
And we didn't do justice. I don't know why we got through so fast. You were reading about Brazil, and we just got to laughing instead of listening. And I was ashamed of that quit.
This is the sad story I told you about. This is a script. It's a feature script that I have under option for a producer in Miami now.
Yeah.
Been working on it since June.
Yeah.
And it's called Run, Wolf, Run. And it's about an Indian boy and some wolves. And this was in the paper this morning, and it's about a film called Run, Joe, Run, and it's about an Indian boy and a German shepherd.
How about that? So what do you make of that?
Well, there's too much similarity. I hope it doesn't kill my film, because I'd like to see that. I'd like to finish this film and get it sold.
Now, what is this for?
This is a feature film. It's
That is just for one performance.
Well, it would go in the movie houses.
Oh yes.
And it's because it's the kind of stuff I like to write. It's more of a. It's a family film. I'm not very good at ardent sex scenes and high, rough adventure. I don't write a good fight. I've tried several times.
Well, now what do you have to go on to do this?
Well, I create a story and characters. This is the treatment. This is what the producer looks at first. And this tells where the film takes place, how many characters are involved, and then this is the story, broken up scene by scene. And then that's the actual script that the producer would shoot from.
Yeah.
I'm not done with that yet. I finished this. That's just partially finished.
You're working on this.
Yeah. This is the kind of stuff, what I've been.
Is this what you mean when you say you've been writing scripts?
Well,
this is just one of many kinds.
That's a feature film. It's the first time I've ever tried that. This is most of the stuff that I do. For example,
you know all this?
Briefly only.
This is a film. It's a police training film done for Motorola. And they gave me the subject of report writing. Every policeman needs to write reports. And all they said to me was, write an interesting film that the policeman will at least sit through and watch on report writing. So I had some fun with that one. But
And you had nothing to go by?
No, what I had to find out is what they have to know about report writing.
Yeah.
Now, this is completely fiction. This is my imagination.
Yeah.
Totally.
But this has to be completely...
This has to go with a teacher's manual. So I had to go and interview various law enforcement bureaus and find out why don't policemen like to write report writing? What are the biggest problems? I went and sat with a couple of district attorneys and found out what's wrong with the report that the policemen write. Why does it hurt them? And then I had to incorporate this information into an interesting film that the policemen would watch. And the way I did it is I created action. The first scene is a holdup, a liquor store holdup. And the policeman risks his life to stop it. But because he does not fill out his report properly, he also risks putting those men right back on the street again because the case won't hold up. And I have a courtroom scene in. There are numerous things that can happen. Number one, a policeman doesn't go to court with a case sometimes 6 months to a year after he makes the arrest. So the only way he can remember what happened that night is by his report. If his report isn't detailed and accurate, he's in trouble. Little things like if he didn't give the man his rights and say that he gave the man his rights in the report, that case can be thrown out of court because the man wasn't given his rights. And then I go out to tell them how the importance. I also show what happens to the report, who uses it, so that they realize that it's not just a piece of paper that they're being forced to do when they would rather be out there catching crooks. It helps, even a report on an accident helps people plan traffic patterns in the city to prevent accidents and all this type of thing. So you tie everything together. And you do it by dramatizing it. And I'm kind of proud of this one.
That's a lot of investigation, it looks to me like.
Yep.
And furthermore, she has to get it straight.
Oh, yes. This is a film on the Mailman Center for Child Development. Now, what my assignment here was, in a 15-minute film, I had to give an overview of their operation. I had to do it dramatically because they were going to use the film to raise funds for the foundation. So I had to show everything and yet run a story through it. And I started with the birth of a baby. which is another story, because after I wrote it in, it took me almost 4 weeks to find a hospital that would let us film it. But we did get it. We filmed the actual birth, and then the dramatic part was, you see this beautiful birth happening, and then you freeze frame, and then you say, but what if the child's not born normal? What happens then? And then we go into the problem of the problem first. Children that are born with learning disabilities and so forth. And then we go into the operation of this center. And I did it by using a child, an actual child in the center that I happen to have known. And her parents, who were very grateful to the center, consented. His father took off from work and he modeled for us and used it. And I just carried that as a thread through, using this child as an example, but then going from her in various places to talk about the other things that the center's doing. And there are several areas of the center. They not only diagnose children and treat children, but they have a research center, and that had to be covered too. I don't know whether I told you what that... I was a speech therapist. I graduated. My degree is in speech and drama. I had a very practical mother. She was raised by a concert pianist who starved during the Depression and after. And so the idea of me going into theater just didn't appeal to her. So I took all the speech therapy things, and I worked for 2.5 years at Philadelphia General Hospital as a speech therapist. And I thought I knew pretty much about speech therapy, but they have a man at the Mailman Center who has machinery that can detect disabilities in speech 3 days after birth. And it's done with a pacifier attached to electronic equipment. And he can do it by the time it takes a child to respond to sound with a sucking reaction. And they can check both learning ability and speech ability, formation of sounds when they get older. It just astounds me. There are two doctors doing it in the country. So this is the kind of job I like, because I like to learn new things when I work. That's why I quit my job for the film company, because I was doing 2-3 land sales films a year. One film on horse racing every year. One film on dog racing every year. One film on highlight every year. And I wasn't learning anything more. I mean, it was the same thing over and over again. Little girl, you sure do have noisy feet.
Well, that's what we like around here. Yeah, we want to know when people coming in.
How are the horses?
Guy, this is a shirt that was given to me by the school in Brazil.
Oh, really? Well, isn't that nice?
Before my daughter confiscated it, I used to wear it. This is the Presbyterian school in Estreito on the Trans-Amazonas Highway. You gonna ride, honey?
Well, that's when you see what goes on when they get in the lesson. Aww. That's the fun.
Why don't you go put your one? Oh, okay. You're welcome to stay. So that's another crime.
Well, let me tell you, I never realized, gee whiz, this is, you really get into it, don't you?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I do. Here's, well, that's the one on Brazil. That's the one that I went to Brazil to do for the Presbyterian Church.
You, that's all finished?
Yeah, these are all done.
Yeah.
And now these are all, this was on speculation, because it's an area I want to learn more about and get into.
Mm-hmm.
And then after I do this, I have to try and sell it. But all of these I was paid to do. I was commissioned to do. So none of this was on speculation.
Yeah, including the one on Brazil.
Right. This is on an island, San Salvador. This was for a land developer, but he had nothing to show. So I talked him into doing a history film on Columbus's first landfall and what Columbus must have seen, and I had a lot of fun with this one, in Pirates. This was for the state of Florida. And this was kind of a rough one because they
would
wanted...
Would you like some orange juice or some milk or some water, or that's the refrigerator over there?
They wanted to encourage people to do something for the bicentennial.
You go out there and sit down and watch them, because this is dull in here. You can hear your mama when you get home now.
Honey, you'll be able to see him.
You just sit down in that chair, go anywhere you want to, just watch them. Just watch them, that's the thing. Watch them horses.
The problem with this was they had no program. But they want me to do a film to tell people to get programmed. So...
I lost the track of that.
This is the American Bicentennial Revolution.
Yeah.
There's a Bicentennial Committee. And they wanted to encourage communities around the state to take on bicentennial projects.
Yes.
They wanted a film, but there was nothing to film. Because there was nothing going on.
Mm-hmm.
And they had no plans, really.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to come up with an idea that would stimulate people to want to do something and yet find something to film at the same time. And that's when I met Neil Schweitzer. What I decided to do, I went out with a tape recorder and a sound man, and I stopped people on the street all over the state, and I asked them, what do you think about the American Revolutionary Bicentennial? And nobody knew what it was, and we got some great reactions, but the one I loved best was on Miami Beach, and this little man was sitting on a bench, and I went up to him, and I said, can I ask you a question? The cameraman was there, too. We took pictures of him and recorded. And I said, what do you think of the American Revolution Bicentennial? And he looked at me like I was crazy, and he said, revolutions, I don't like revolutions. And he just walked away from me, very angry. I used it in the film.
Yeah.
But what I used the beginning for was to show that people didn't even know what this was all about, that it was going to be their country's 200th anniversary and nobody was aware it was coming.
Yeah.
Then I went around to people who I got a list from the state of suggestions of people who are leaders in the state in some way. And I went to Neil Schweitzer. You know Neil, don't you?
I just know who he is. You see, I know him through
Wade. Well, I asked him what he thought we should do, and of course he talked about doing something with our environment so that it's more livable and everything. Spoke to a delightful woman down in Key West. Her grandfather had been the first public health commissioner of the state of Florida. He went through the state on a train inoculating people for smallpox.
Yeah.
And her father was a banker. She'd been Key West all her life. And just a delightful woman, and she was fighting with the Navy. I had to edit her quite a bit, though, because she was really a little nasty with the Navy. There's an old fort in Key West that's on the naval base. And they had started to blow away part of it just to make room for storage. They were using it for storage, and she was having a fit. So she wanted, as Key West Bicentennial Project, to preserve this fort. She had exerted quite a bit of pressure on the Navy, and they were backing down. They were stopping blowing it up anyway. But we took her out on the fort, and we filmed her, and she talked about American heritage. And I used her as part of a history, to preserve our history concept.
Yeah.
And that's what that film's all about. So that was fun.
Well, that's kind of documentary.
Yeah.
Where you move around yourself.
That's right.
And then you've got a good bit of editing, or somebody has.
Oh, yes. You do an awful lot of editing.
Who does all that?
I guess
you have a staff.
The script editing I do, but the film editing, we have a film editor, and I usually work with him.
Is that hard work?
I think it's very difficult, and I think it takes a great talent. I've been with good editors and bad editors.
Mm-hmm.
A good editor can make a film alive because your pacing in a film comes from your editor, not your script. Your script is your guideline to shoot. and it is your finished narration too. I usually write at least two scripts, sometimes three. I write a shooting script. That's what the director and the cameraman go out and shoot from. Sometimes, not always, I write an editing script. Now, on my Brazilian film, my original script held up because when I went to Brazil, I didn't do any shooting of film, but I taped everything. So all of the live sound and everything that I wanted, I had and I could work with. So that when they went out to shoot the picture, the script was very solid. And then after the editor is done, I have to adjust the script again, because the editor is the one that determines the pacing, how long a scene should be on, how many cutaways you have from one place to another to put in to make a unit. And then I have to make the script fit after that. That's not true in feature films. That's true in documentaries. In feature films, everything that's in that script is shot exactly as it is in the script, because it's fiction. But in documentaries like the Bicentennial film, you're dealing with real people. They're not working from the script. And all I can do is guess at what they're going to say or put my questions. I can rehearse them a little, but I put my questions to them in such a way that I'll get the kind of answer I want. So this is more work for the writer that way. All this rewriting is done before the script is shot.
Well,
that's what I've been doing the past 10 years.
Past 10 years.
Yeah.
So you would like to have a little change?
No, I love doing this.
Well, I wondered about that.
No,
I don't
really
know
love
where
it.
You'd find out anything that combines or different.
I fully love it. It doesn't have to be the only thing I do, but I fully love it. Now, while I've been doing this for the past 10 years. I've also been doing this.
Yeah.
And you looked at these the other day.
I didn't see myself in who you were.
But
I'm
a rather pragmatic person. If I can't make a living writing scripts, then I'll make a living at whatever else I can make a living at that lets me be in a field that I can give something to, which I think
now,
is communication.
Now, what are you doing here?
I designed it. I don't do the artwork because I don't have any talents along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
But I do the rough layout. I decide where the pictures will go.
Mm-hmm.
I write all the stories.
Mm-hmm.
And I work with the printer to make sure it gets done.
Now the artwork would be this?
Yeah. This, someone does this. I, with this particular one, I came up with the name. And I told him basically what I wanted up here, and then
mm-hmm.
he did the artwork. Sometimes I don't even do that. Sometimes I just, this is really my area.
Mm-hmm.
I have not taken many pictures. When I went to Brazil, it was the first time I ever really handled a camera.
Oh, really?
Because nobody else was there to do it, and I had to.
Oh, really?
And I like it.
You like it?
But I haven't done very much with still camera. I haven't done very much with it, and I'm not very good.
With a still camera?
I kind of do it by the feet. The best picture I have, I got accidentally.
Yeah.
I was taking a picture of a little girl, and I was concentrating on her in the doorway. When I developed the picture, the missionary was sitting here, and she's here. And it's just beautiful. It shows him behind her
mm-hmm.
in the shadows.
Yeah.
I'd consider myself a cameraman if I had designed it that way.
Yeah.
But I just kind of take pictures and... I've taken some pictures in some of these publications, but I don't fancy myself a cameraman too much.
And you don't do the movie camera?
No, I've never used a movie camera.
Mm-hmm.
Nor have I ever edited. I've worked with an editor.
Mm-hmm.
Secretly, I would like to try editing someday, but I've never done it.
Mm-hmm.
Because all of my projects have required the client... I think is owed the best talents you can give him, and my talents aren't in that area, so I wouldn't. If I could fool around on my own on one of my own projects, I would.
There is such a thing as a talent for editing film.
Oh yes, it's an eye and it's a sense of pacing.
Yeah.
Anybody can put the film together. That's very easy.
Mm-hmm.
But to put it together so that it keeps the interest of the eye, mm-hmm. and to match a scene to a scene, I think that takes a talent. I've seen a lot of bad editing.
Yeah. And this is the same kind of thing?
Yeah, these are, well, these two are for land developers. This one, which Dean Jones at the university got a tremendous kick out of because he didn't know companies do things like this. This was for a milk company, MacArthur Dairies. And I faked my way in college. They had a radio station in college, and I needed some money. And they wanted a woman's show. And I kid you not, I didn't learn to cook till after I got married, and it was purely a hit-or-miss deal. But I had a woman's cooking show on radio when I was in college. And I used to steal recipes from magazines, and I never tasted anything because I didn't know how to cook in those days. But it gave me experience for doing this one. It's to help push the product for the client. And I would go to the dairy and talk to them and try and find out something in their operation that I thought might be curious or interesting to the people that they serve.
Yeah.
And when they push cottage cheese, I'd, of course, go look for something that promoted cottage cheese or told something about it.
Now, what, when they did what?
Well, if they had a special on cottage cheese that
yeah.
month, I'd look for recipes or things like that.
Yeah.
And it wasn't difficult to do.
Yeah. And what did Dean Jones think about it?
He didn't know milk dairy companies did things like this. He said he's used to company publications, but he had never seen
consumer
publication like this. Two of my things are consumer publications. This one was too. This went to a Galloway's Furniture. Used to send it out to their customers. What I do is I take the trade journals and see what's new in fashion.
Yeah.
And then tie that in with whatever we had to push as a stimulant so people would come into the store and look at new products.
Well, gee whiz, it looks to me like you're just getting into everybody's business.
Yes, I am. I'm guilty. Very nosy girl.
No, I don't mean that, but I mean you're having to. It looks like that's way beyond what would be expected.
No. Well, let me give you an example. They hired me to put out a publication, Burger King Corporation.
Yeah.
They'd never had one. But in order for me to do it, I had to understand their business, or I couldn't write about it.
Yeah.
And this is for their employees. I had to learn all of their incentive programs. I had to know where their problems were and what they wanted out of their employees. If there was a problem with, for example, theft, I had to understand this, and I had to do articles about that. If they wanted to motivate sales, the Operation Bootstrap, not the name but the program, was my idea originally, giving awards to in-store personnel who did outstanding jobs. So you can't write for a company unless you know something about them.
Yes, gee whiz, that is something. Now how do they pay you for that?
They only pay me for the publication. I just would get paid for the publication. An industrial publication runs, you can figure $50 a page, $200 for a four pager, for one pager, $150. So
don't tell me. That doesn't sound like very much.
It's not. That's why I had to do so many of them. Now this man was a lot nicer, and that's why I worked for him as long as I did. He wanted an employee publication, but he only had 100 employees, and I told him that it wouldn't be worth my while to do what he would want to spend on that thing. And he was determined to have it, and he was determined to have me. So I told him I would do a internal, external publication, not only just for his employees, but for all of his customers and potential customers around the country. And that's what this turned out to be. And this was my half of my, good part of my bread and butter. He put me on a $4,000 a year routine.
Oh, really?
And I did this publication. I did all of his business letters, all of his brochures. He did two brochures a year and maybe one ad. And then that also gave him the right to call me up when he had a problem with a letter or something. So he did that too. And we got along real well, and I met a lot of interesting people because he had interesting clients. This was the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration building that they built in Miami. And I did a story on that for them, telling what the operation was, what went on in the building, and that was picked up by the United States government and reprinted in their publication. So, and I met a lot of interesting people. I liked it. Learned a lot, an awful lot about oceanic research too. I always thought I always thought those people were pretty dull.
Mm-hmm.
But they are a fascinating group of people and great sense of humor.
Oh, isn't
it? Dr. Stewart, this man, is one of my, this gentleman is I think one of my all-time favorite people. He's got a good mind and a sense of humor. And I've done a couple jobs for him. He'd call me up when he needed something done. So I really enjoyed this one. But I was getting bored with it because it was too much the same thing after a while.
Well, I would tell you, you straighten me out now. I somehow got the idea, when we were talking the other day, of course, we just talked a little while, and we were just chattering most of the time, that you had enough script writing, and you wanted to do things like what you'd started to write on the Brazil.
That's right. Yeah. Two things I want to do. One, what I had said to you was that I've been a communicator for about 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Good, bad, or indifferent. Sometimes good, sometimes bad. But now I want to be a writer. And I think there's a difference. A writer has to communicate, but he has to have another dimension to his communication. I don't know whether I'm making my point. I want the things that I write to be read because in themselves they are so interesting that anybody can read them, and not simply because the person who picked them up is interested in the subject.
Yeah.
I'm not done with scripts because I like the medium. But I don't want to do any more land development films. I want to do scripts that a writer would do. That's what my little wolf thing is about. They can be documentary or they can be fictional, but I want them to be of quality writing. I want them to be something that will stand up on their own.
Well,
and I want to learn to be a better writer. That's basically what I want to do. And I've got a lot of learning to do.
Well, now, you're going to keep your hand in what you've been doing.
Not the publications anymore, but this type of stuff, this wolf script, I'd like to keep doing.
Yeah.
I don't want to do any. I want to graduate from this level into something.
Now this is
more like
this is the one that's imaginary.
Yeah.
And you here's
this is the script.
That's the script, and this is the
treatment
of it. Yes.
You
want to get more into this side.
Yeah. Not necessarily. It doesn't have to be fiction.
Yeah.
It's a difference in quality. I don't want to do any more of these things. I've had all these I ever want to see.
You've had enough of those.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind, like I told Wade, if his development ever gets, I wouldn't mind doing it for something I'm interested in.
Yeah.
But I don't want to do it for a living anymore. I want to write. I'd like to write books. I'd like to write good magazine articles.
Well, now, what is it? What is it they want you to do up at the university?
Well, the one job that I have applied for is radio and television writer for the educational television station.
Now, say that. Just give it to me in plain language. I don't, not good at those labels.
Well, I wish I knew exactly, because I don't.
What do you think it is?
But it's script writing.
Yeah.
I assume they have an educational radio station.
Sure.
And an educational television station. And they have material that goes on the air, and that's what they need a writer for, I assume.
Well, let me tell you.
We haven't discussed it.
That, that radio station is about as crummy as you'll find.
I figured as much.
As a matter of fact, I never saw one that wasn't crummy. I was in the hospital at Miami, and I heard one of the radio stations down there, and the boys on that seemed to be fairly intelligent. I mean, I listened to them talk, but on this, they don't talk. They just they just chatter all the time. It's about the this Harfred auto imports, and you hear that from one day to another.
Oh, Lord.
Until you get sick of it.
Well, I assumed in talking to Dr. Christensen that what he's looking for ultimately is to be able to do some interesting programs, develop some interesting programs for the station.
I've never heard of one.
But I don't think he's done too much yet. And I know he's very
short
of funds.
If he's done anything, I'd love to know about it.
Have you ever watched the educational television channel out of the university?
Oh, I used to watch it all the time.
The only thing I've seen on it so far are very dull lectures. And
it used to be more interesting when it started than it is now. They're working in everybody, the blacks and the Puerto Ricans and the
candidates.
And
they have had some marvelous stuff on national educational television.
Yes. Well, they get some of it here.
Most of it comes out of Boston.
Oh, does it?
And I would, I'd have no objections to being able to do some of the stuff that I've seen come out of that Boston educational television.
Television, yes, but not radio.
Well, I don't know what they do at the radio station at all. No idea.
You take my word for it. It is sickening.
Well,
it is a total loss.
The situation, though, basically was that I've got to figure out a way to make a living. I know I'm going to come up here because I've made up my mind that's what I want
to
do.
Well, I'm just talking to you, understand?
Yeah, I know. But this is why, and when Dr. Christensen, what I would rather do, I would like to go for my master's. Not so much for the degree, because I don't think that's going to do me good one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel very much like I have to stimulate my own learning again. I don't know if you're familiar with the journalism school. I know you were in the English department, but the journalism school here is considered one of the best in the country. And I'd like to see if I can just get back into the habit of learning again. I think it would be good for me.
You know, I'm going to tell you, our point of view is different, Susan.
Well, you've been where I want to go.
I think, I don't have any of the journalistic feeling. See, that's my...
Well, that I know.
That's my great... back. There, in any of the journalism I've seen, there is no intellectual content. It's all writing for the market. And
mm-hmm.
once you do that, you discard the other. It is simply 99% inevitable. I see, I'm just talking with you.
I agree with you.
No, don't agree with me.
No, I agree with you to a point. I agree with you. But if you want to write something, and you write it with great excellence and intellect,
you've got to sell it. You got to.
And it's not read. What have you accomplished?
Well, I don't know how we are talking now. You see, I'm not arguing with you. I'm just...
I'm not
actually presenting a side, because I don't know enough about it. But...
I'm interested in reaching people.
Well, I tell you, that's my trouble. And that is my trouble. I mean, it's got me in a hole. I'd be safe and sound. You'd never hear of me if I do like the other scholars. Just get me a cubicle over there and reach up there and write me an article. I can write articles.
Mm-hmm. And they'll get read by people like you.
Doubtful.
Well,
very seldom.
No, they'll get read by people, but you won't be extending that to anywhere else.
No, you won't even get many people like me.
It's that bad, huh?
It's that bad. There's so many of them. And you see, they work for the state now. I'm just talking to you behind the scenes. You understand how that is.
I sure do.
I mean, there's no hard feelings. I'm not against them up there, you see. I have to work with people. I mean, they face the problems that I have faced. But, you know, I don't know. It's all in your definition of the problem, or in your perception of the problem of what goes forth. And as I see the journal, now let me tell you, I didn't mean to get started. I'll quit in just a minute. But I started. I'll try to make a little something out of it and go. I've just been going through some of the student journalism in the Sun, just to see what they do. It's very hard to take one of their little scripts and actually see what they do. It's about as hard to see what they do as it is to read a poem by John Donne and see what he does.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's the same process. It takes the same gifts, and it's not slow. I mean, it's slow. It's not fast. You
right.
just can't read it and say, this is what this fellow's doing. You got to live with it, kind of, a little bit. But you can fake a good deal in that it's superficial enough, and the photographs carry it so much. Why I would be interested in that is for fairly young people, or you might say in their 20s, it would enable them to talk to people and look at people. The only thing is that these UF journalists, these student journalists, don't look at people. It's always a process.
There's been a big complaint for years. You're really good ones. Well, I'd like to do something like Charles Carroll is doing. He's traveling around the country in a van, and he does a story, I think, once a week or so on the news. And he's reporting from the road. And he goes out to the farms, and if there's a farm problem, he goes out and he talks to all these farmers. And he sits down and listens to their side, and he has coffee in their kitchen with them. There was a big complaint for years about war correspondents, that most of them wrote all their stories from the bar of the hotel and never got out to see anything. But then there came along a man like Ernie Pyle who didn't do that. And he became a writer to me. That's the difference.
Yeah.
It isn't the vehicle you use. It's how you use it that makes the difference.
Yeah.
If I want to teach, well, let's take a simple thing. If I want to teach a child about prejudice, I could write a most logical article in the world, and I wouldn't reach that child.
Who's the other fella out west who reports so much? He travels around the country, but not like Charles Carroll. What is his name? He's a special. You hear him just ever so often.
Hmm.
He reports on things. What is his name?
You mean Mike Wallace, do
you? No. Well, Mike Wallace is the same type as this fellow. You see. Well, anyhow, I see kind of what you have in mind, but I don't think Charles Girald is a good example of anything. For instance, his scripts are not.
No.
You see, he quits just about the time he gets to the innocent point.
Well, see, that's the problem with journalism and why I've never been interested in journalism.
Yes.
Journalism
that's
never
right.
gives you the time.
That's right.
That's why I've never worked for a newspaper.
That's right.
You go out and you get a story, but they never give you time to find out what's behind the story.
Yeah.
Feature writing is a little different. Magazine writing, you have more time to do your research. A book, you have even more time because you have the depth.
Well, now, feature writing and magazine writing would be different.
Well, feature newspaper writing is closer to magazine writing. And then magazine writing usually goes into it.
I don't
deeper.
Think it's close to magazine writing at all. You see, a magazine writer is not necessarily a professional magazine writer. He just writes a magazine article.
Yeah.
And a feature man is a man
who
makes a living.
Yeah, he's a newsman. You're right there. You're right there.
So that your feature man won't know anything about his subject, and your magazine man will know it well.
Or a good bit better, because even if he's a freelance writer, he's got to do an awful lot of research to make that magazine article good enough for them to print.
Yeah.
But he spends much more time learning the subject matter. He really does.
Well, now you understand I'm not trying to tell you anything, because I just fumble. And so
I don't know exactly where I'm going.
Sure.
I know I want to start growing again. I haven't done that for about 5 years.
Well, I don't think you're entitled to say that with all those manuscripts you've got there.
Well, I've grown some.
I think
it's haven't
more
gotten better.
I think it's partly not. I just argue with you. I think it's partly the people that you associate with. They're not what you might call stimulating.
Yeah, that's a lot to do with it. You see, what happened is when I first started doing this, it
the
was
last,
all new.
The last thing they want to be is stimulating. It's not to their point to be stimulating.
Yeah.
The thing that
upset my last full-time boss the most is that I wanted to do different things.
Yes.
And every time I handed him a script that had something different in it, he got all upset. He wanted to do it the way he's been doing it for 10 years.
Yeah.
And so I left.
Yeah.
And then I worked with some other producers. But in the beginning, everything is interesting in the beginning.
Yeah.
But I think I've learned the mechanics of a lot of things.
Sure.
I just want to use them better.
Sure.
That's really what it's
about.
Yes,
I understand that.
Like, I had this project I wanted to do on Thomas Wolfe. And I put into it all the things I've learned that I've never been able to do because I've never had a budget to do it with.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to put in-depth research. I wanted to use good talent. I wanted to use camera techniques that are not usually done in a $10,000 film, this type of thing. It was another level that I wanted to get to. And I want to do something challenging, too. Something that isn't too easy, that I've really got to sit down and figure out a way to do it.
There's one thing that you don't have to satisfy you, and you won't get it in journalism. You've got to have a little intellectual content.
Yeah.
Now, see, over on the side I'm in, I get too damn much. I get it to the point that it's routine and cut and dried, and I get tired of it.
I agree.
But you don't.
But
get
journalism is only the medium again. It's not the content.
I know, but you won't get that over in the field of journalism.
No. All I do there is sharpen my skills to
use
the medium.
Yes.
But what I put into it, I've got to get somewhere else. I know that.
Yes. I will tell you, one of my friends, he's 20 years older than I am, and I'm 66, somewhere along there. He's 84. He's born in 1890. He retired at 65, went to Fort Myers Beach. And he's gifted, and he's done everything. He was a captain of infantry in World War, of artillery in World War I. And he's a scholar, medieval scholar.
Hmm.
But he can tell you about the stock market. He knows what's in the newspaper. And any newspaper, every day, you see, he's gifted. Wilson, he retired at Fort Myers Beach at 65, and that's the biggest mistake he ever made.
Mm-hmm.
He left the center. He just surrounded with people down there whose minds don't work.
I know exactly what you mean.
And that's what's happened to him.
That's what drove me out of Miami.
Yeah. So so, you see, I'm afraid to leave here because I have access to the university. And
well,
even,
that's why I want to come here.
Even the people out here have a little greater charge than they do at Winter Haven.
You know, they're really dead. They just don't know it yet.
Yeah. Well, it's a charge.
It's really a beautiful cemetery.
Let me tell you, I could go in there with you. I have a considerable charge. I have such a charge face as I wear people out. But I could go into Winter Haven with you and we'd make something of it.
It would take two of us.
With your skills, you understand.
At least it would take two. Although, I'll tell you.
But my approach, my strategy, my attack on it would open it up, would make it live.
I tell you, there's another writer in Winter Haven right now who's also on his way out. And I went to Winter Haven, not because of Winter Haven. I went to Winter Haven because he was there. Mm-hmm. And he's a little bit younger than you, but people say the same thing of him, that he wears people out.
Yeah. I never get tired. I could do this a couple hours.
Well, this is...
This is
Frank. I got in the habit of getting up at 4 in the morning writing because that's what he does, and he's been my teacher for 3 months now.
Oh, yeah.
And he one day said to me, I can't stay up late at night. I get tired at night.
I see.
And he says, well, he doesn't get tired at night either, but he says, just get up early in the morning. He says, that's when it's a good time to write because it's quiet and you don't have all these vibrations in the air from other people that are cluttering up your vibration.
Yeah.
And so I started, in June, started getting up 4 o'clock in the morning and writing. And I produced, I'd say 100% more than I produced 10 years before, in less time, in a couple hours.
But less effort.
In the morning. Felt good. I take a nap at 2 o'clock.
Yeah.
Because I get worn out.
Short one.
Take them too long, you can't get up again.
Yeah.
And then I would get up, I'd even come home from school, I'd make dinner, and I'm ready to go back to work for a couple hours. And I enjoy that schedule.
Yeah.
But the two of us in Winter Haven were defeated.
Yeah.
Because all we ever did was talk to each other. There was nobody else. I don't care if a person has the same interests as I do. But when I'm done writing, I need to be able to turn around and talk to somebody once in a while. Or argue with somebody. I like to argue a little bit. As long as the person doesn't take it personally. And there was just nobody to do that with. I just felt like I was in a vacuum. And that's when I decided to call up here and try and find a job. And I think the reason I wanted to go back to school was really just to put myself in with people again. I would never take more than one course because I'm not going back to school only to get a master's degree so I can do something else. That's not it. But I felt that if I did get back in, and I knew the people at the journalism school because I've been coming up for seminars every year for about 6 years now.
Oh, have you?
Mm-hmm.
So you knew them?
Yeah. I come up for the history seminars, and I come up for journalism seminars. I was president of the Industrial Editors Association for about 3 years down in Miami, only because nobody else would take the job. I got elected, and then nobody else would take it, so...
And you've been coming up here.
So I come up for their extension seminars.
Sure.
And I didn't think they'd remember me because I was just one person of a lot of people that came up.
Yeah.
But when the acting dean of academic affairs sent me over to the university, I was really surprised that a couple of the people there remembered me by name.
Oh, really?
Because I have not been up for a couple of years. And Dean Jones said he would like me very much to teach. Unfortunately, they're short money. Not teach full-time, but they have 4 part-time teaching spots that they need filled. But Tallahassee hasn't given them extra money for it yet. Their enrollment is larger than they had... I guess this is what happens. Their enrollment is larger than they had planned on. And they have some beginning classes that they don't have teachers for. The department... The enrollment has expanded, but the department hasn't.
Check with somebody who's been around the university. Now that's slave labor.
Oh, I agree.
And there's nothing to it. It's just where it's just tiring.
Well, I have a situation. I have never in my life, from the time I was 20 when I began to be self-sufficient until now, ever depended on anybody else. I, you know, paid my own way straight through. Maybe this isn't a good attitude, but it's my attitude. I'm kind of proud of it. I fell financially. I fell flat on my face this summer for the first time. And I got a little girl out there that I got to take care of. Now, I want to write. That's what I want to do. But I have to figure some way that's compatible with what I want to do that I can make a living.
All I meant to say about the teaching is...
I don't want to be a teacher.
Well, I'm not talking about being a teacher. I don't call this teaching. It's just slave labor.
Yeah.
It's just a lot of routine. It's a lot of red tape. And
following the program. And
oh, yes.
And it's,
oh, yes.
It's stuffing it in the mouth and listening to it regurgitate it again.
I don't know what it is, but if you've been around in it, you don't... It'd be good practice for a beginner, 20-year-old, 23 or 4-year-old.
I wasn't really concerned much with anything more than making a few extra bucks, really.
Well...
That was all I was interested in.
Well, that's not the way you presented it to me.
No, the teaching?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought at one time I'd like... You know, I figured... But, you see, it's not really my main interest. If I taught... It's because I thought it would be compatible with what else I want to do. I know what you're saying.
Yeah. So we don't keep those wires separate.
Well, what should we call it? Brainwashing.
Well, it's just assistantships that they have open.
Right.
But they give that to the beginners.
Mm-hmm.
You're not a beginner.
Yeah, but I'm not academically qualified to do anything else.
Well, you make up your own mind. You say, I'm not making up your mind for you.
No, that's what they tell me. They tell me you've got to have a master's degree to do anything else. And I don't have a master's degree.
Yeah. Well, now, this is not their problem. But...
But that's basically where I am now. I know I'm going to come up here because I agree with you that you have to be somewhere where the vitality and the atmosphere is conducive to creativity, to learning. And I think Gainesville is the place. It's probably not the only place in the world, but it's a place that I'm comfortable and I'd like to be.
I think your notion of Gainesville is off base. It's a very unpleasant place to be in. And
that I can't see.
Well, I'm
telling
you.
But I have never lived here.
Well, I'm just telling you. And it's not satisfying at all. And if there's any other place to live, you know, you know.
1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4, this is what? Left channel? Testing the left channel. 1, 2, 3, 4. Testing the left channel. 1, 2, 3, 4. And we want to listen and see if we can hear this on the right channel.
Mm-hmm.
It's very difficult. Very difficult, too.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not good for children. Gainesville or not.
Well, that surprises me.
I thought
it would be good for them.
Oh, no. Now, if you want them just to, or you can, well, they can learn how to swim, and there's all sorts of contests they can get into, and activities and things like that. But it's, you got a bunch of people, say, in the medical school over there, they're cutthroat. And you don't have anything more cutthroat in Miami than you've got in certain spots in this place.
Hmm.
It's not a humane place at all. is not an enlightened place.
Well, that surprises me. I realized that there would only be one element, possibly, of enlightenment. It wouldn't be totally enlightened. But
and
there
the
must
ones
be some.
Who are enlightened, you still don't have access to them. You see, I've been into it so long, and in my context up there, if you just knew the terms in which I associate with the people up there, you'd just be amazed. And the only reason I say that to you is the expectation is all. You know,
yeah, I am enthusiastic.
You just do the best you can, and it's nice to be.
Well, look at the alternative, though. I can go back to Miami, which I was suffocating in.
I think the best thing for this, now you see, I didn't really mean to get into this. I think the best thing for this would do for you is to be a change. And after you have a little of this, you might appreciate Miami.
No, I got some property in North Carolina that appeals to me.
Yeah.
But first, I got to be independent. I got some property on the side of a mountain in North Carolina. Now, that's where I'd like to live.
No, I wouldn't want to live in a mountain.
I like mountains. But
it'd be all right once.
My other, I've got two alternatives. I can go live with my brother, which would be disastrous for both of us, as much as I love him. Or I can go to California, which is frightening to me because I've never been there. And although there is more opportunity for me in the area I want to do, to work in, I also know my own vulnerability. I'm not a very sophisticated person as far as business is concerned, and California is like Miami in that there are a lot of very shrewd people. And I don't like to deal with people on those terms too much. I just like to be able to do my thing.
Sure.
And I still feel Gainesville would be the best place for me at this time in my life, maybe not forever.
Just so you don't expect to things that are not here.
No, I do expect.
There are a lot of things you can do here, there's no doubt about that. But
we got a nice library.
Oh, you got
that's
a lot of cooperation all along the line, but.
I think I would find, because it is a state university, much of the frustrations I found when I worked for the state, in that many things that may be good for a project will be lost in the bureaucracy.
No, I'm thinking about you getting away from your scripts into some other type of writing and thinking.
Well, that I have to do on my own. No place is going to make any difference in that.
I don't think you can do that on your own. I think that comes from some of the people that you work with. I can't do it on my own.
Oh, I see what you mean. No, I understand that. I know very well that if I took the job with the television station, there would be no creativity whatsoever involved in what I did there.
Mm-hmm.
It would be an expedient thing to get some security so that I could do these things or the other things. And that's the only reason. It is not the best way. If I were really smart, I'd take a job as a cop.
Now, let me tell you, I didn't mean to get into your thing on the university.
No, I understand that.
I'm more interested in that.
But I need a framework in order to do other things. And the framework has to be an economical one.
Yes, and you can't say now just where the framework is going to turn loose and you get into the other thing. You can't say. You can hope and
ideally, I would love to be able to take a job where I could,
leave
if
it
not
at the office.
Doing the same, no. I would, ideally, I'd like to take a job that would help me develop the skills and the things I need to do the kind of writing I want to do, ideally. I had a writer tell me once if I was really smart, I'd take a job as a cocktail waitress. Do my writing on my own time and work as a cocktail waitress. I didn't make a lousy cocktail waitress.
Well, as a matter of speaking, I might, that might have something in it. Let me tell you what I had thought of. Now that's what I thought. I thought, well, today, when you all came up here, we wouldn't just sit and talk. We'd do something.
Okay.
That's actually my view of it. I never sit and talk. And at the university, there's very little of that goes on. There's less of it. There's less talking over coffee here than any place I've ever seen. They move. That's one thing they do.
Well, I like that.
Yes. Well, what I thought was, you get here, we'll take a camera of some sort out and run into some of these people that I know around here and do a little piece on them.
Okay with me?
I'm not proposing we do it, but that's what I thought we'd do. And
I'd like to hear some of your tapes, too.
You can listen to tapes for just a short time. You know, any more than I could read this in a short time. You got to stay with them a little while. You could take them with you and listen to them for a week.
What? I've talked about what I've done. I'm really interested, and I know you don't want to talk, but I want to know better what you want to do. And where, what
let me tell you, I don't want to do much of anything. I've gone just about where I want to go. What I want to do, actually, you see, I waited too late to get the insight to be a performer, as you've been. You see, I've got the insight now. I've got some of the insight that Faulkner had. And they don't have it amongst the professors.
Yeah, that I know.
But you see, I can't use it. I'm past that. What I'd like to do is, I'd like to work with younger people. And what I found was, in the 20s, they don't have the writing muscle quite. They won't stand up to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I've had to, that's the ones I worked with, the middle 20s. So I've had to discard that, and that's why I'm sort of at loose ends now. I'm just sort of looking around and probing to find somebody, or I'd like to have three or four people to see, like you and people you know. I don't know what type to get, you see, but all I can say is somebody with writing muscle who can just keep at it and like it and pick it up again and keep on doing it. That's all I could specify. And what we do, we just do things.
Now that sounds sensational.
Yes. And it don't matter what you do, you see, just a little old trifling thing. You see, Barbara spent a year, this girl here on the horse, she spent a year on her own in Stratford with one of the old English horse stables, getting up at dawn and mucking out the stable and teaching and training horses, and she did that a solid year, all on her own. Well, you see, nobody's ever written her up. Nobody knows how.
Mm-hmm.
Now, her brother is almost like she is. He's screwball, too. He makes cannon carriages for revolutionary cannons. The only one in the United States. And I've got that beautiful full-page feature story that this woman did in Salisbury, North Carolina. Her daddy let me borrow it. I'd like for you to see that. You've got... You see, you got the feature story, and you got the fiction and documentary. You see, you're sort of thrown from one to the other. You don't know just where you are. Well, you see, I can't do any of it, but.
Well, I haven't been that successful either.
But I see the problem. I see, you know. I kind of see what to work with, but I don't see anything that you see, because I haven't had any experience that you've had. Well, I'm not talking about your skills now. I'm talking about the people you two know and all like that. That's a whole world that I'm perfect blank on.
But I'll tell you where I fail. I had someone once tell me, and trying to give me some guidance, that I'm a perfectionist and I've got to ease up on it a little bit. But I still haven't gotten what I see and I feel down on paper well enough to make other people see and feel it. Maybe I never will. And maybe I'm not seeing it clearly enough either. Maybe I have to learn to see better. I see more clearly today than I did 5 years ago. I'm much more sensitive today than I was 5 years ago.
Yeah.
I wasn't joking when I said that I was kind of like in a fog for 35 years. I really was. I did things, but I did them mechanically. I didn't really feel them when I did them. Now I feel things.
Yeah, you make contact.
Yeah. But I haven't yet communicated in words what I feel.
Let me tell you, I think the best thing for that is to look at some of the examples. One of the finest ones I've ever seen is in Faulkner. It's a little scene in Go Down Moses,
mm-hmm.
where these old Baxter twin brothers have got those hunting dogs. Now, I can't give you a scene, but it's perfectly hilarious. It is extraordinary. It leaves nothing to be desired. Now, that wasn't mine. That's Debbie's. That's Debbie's example.
Mm-hmm.
She had those and read it, and she can't stand it. It's just such a marvelous thing.
That's what I mean when I say writer, not communicator. There are a lot of communicators. But I want to write.
Yeah.
And it takes two things. It takes time. It takes dedication, I guess. That's a pompous word, but, you know, the willingness to work at it, which I have.
Yeah, you got it. Keep that.
And it takes, I guess it's a learning process that just happens as you keep doing it. I don't know. But damn, I want it so bad I can taste it.
Let me tell you what I've done. I've worked with several books. One is Mark Twain, Roughing It.
Yes.
Now you see, the scholars won't use Roughing It.
Why?
Well, they want something where he's talking about the damn human race.
Oh, yeah.
And they want the mysterious stranger, and